Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek, what's with the crumpling? We're on the air, my friend. No one wants to hear this.
Hey, listen, you're crumbling it now.
I'm just trying to point out how distracting that is.
Hold on. You can't say that don't crumble and then you crumble. That's defeating the purpose.
I'm just making a point. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, getting on my last nerve already. The show just started. Adam Vingan here with you. Hope everybody is having a wonderful start to their Wednesday, a beautiful Wednesday here in Nashville, Tennessee. So I walk into the studio, and on the back wall where our fearless producer David Jane sits, as well as Nick Frazier and Nick Keezer and Ian Safar, when they're producing our programs, there is a poster of the Predators' schedule. And I noticed this as I was waiting for the end of Chasing Big Joe. I looked at the first three games on the schedule. And next to each game, the home game against Dallas, the road game against Detroit, and the home game against Seattle, in blue pen, L. The Predators are 0-3-0 after losing last night 7-3 to the Seattle Kraken. It is the Predators' worst three-game start to a season in 18 years. Yes, as we pointed out yesterday, the last team to do this, the 2006-2007 team, ended up winning 51 games. So it's early. But they are one of two teams in the National Hockey League that has yet to earn a standings point. The other, just as we all anticipated, the Colorado Avalanche, are also 0-3. But the Predators and Avalanche are the only two teams in the NHL who have not earned a standings point in the early going of the season. And as I'm watching the game last night, I'm listening to Willie call the game. Always enjoy hearing Willie on the call. I go, I know that guy. I work with him. There are some issues that I'm a bit concerned about through three games. And it's I saw a tweet from Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, friend of the station. We love Greg here. He had a tweet last night that said, quote, "I think the panic after five or fewer games played news cycle is one of my favorite times of the NHL season." Because the Oilers were 0-3. They were down 2-0 early in the game against the Philadelphia Flyers. They ended up winning. The Oilers are the Predators' next opponent tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. But there are a few things about this Predators team that are concerning to me. First and foremost, odd man rushes. They have allowed, in three games at 5-on-5, they have allowed 22 odd man rushes at 5-on-5 through three games. That translates to 9.79 odd man rushes against per 60 minutes, which is the worst in the NHL. So at the beginning of the season, you saw it last night, two of the goals Seattle scored were on odd man rushes. Oliver Bjorkstrand's goal that made it 2-0, and Jaden Schwartz's goal, which I believe was the game-winning goal, which made it 4-3. So whatever's going on defensively, I know we've focused a lot on the offense over the course of the offseason because of all of the additions they made, and we'll get into that too. But defensively, it's a mess. I mean, I know, again, it's early, but I have been thoroughly unimpressed by what I've seen from this club on the defensive end of the ice.
They're not playing good hockey. Too many turnovers. They had their chances with the power play. I mean, toward the end of that second period, I mean, there must have been an invisible net of some around the goal, because they had just about every opportunity to take the lead after they had came back and tied the game up. Every opportunity to take the lead, and for whatever reason, I mean, Seattle's goalie, how do you pronounce this?
Joey Decord.
Decord?
Yeah.
I mean, that kid was in net. He was, as you say, standing on your head. That kid was standing on his head for that particular moment. I don't know. Again, it's early, and they're still trying to figure some things out. I understand when you bring new components to a team, it may take a little time to sort of iron out the wrinkles and get everybody on the same page. So I get that part, but the effort and things like that, that regardless if you have a new team, old team, young team, whatever, the effort should always be there no matter what. And when you have odd man rushes, that tells me somebody isn't giving maximum effort. There's breakdowns on the offensive side, on the offensive end of the ice, which in turn puts you in bad situations coming on the other side. So they got to figure it out. Again, I know it's only three games, but listen, three can turn it to five can turn it to 10, 10 can turn it to 15. So get it fixed now so you don't have to worry about it moving forward.
Willie, there was a quote from Andrew Burnett after the game last night that I want to get your opinion on when I saw it shared on social media. Burnett said, quote, "We're trying to be cute. We're trying to show how talented we are to everybody, but we're not really playing with a purpose." What do you make of that?
I think that was accurate last night without question. I think last night was different than the first two games in some ways. I think the Predators, and we pointed this out a bunch of times on our station, on our broadcast, I wouldn't say they dominated the first two games, but they had the upper hand in territorial play and a lot of the things that you want to do that most nights are going to win you games. It didn't get the result. The odd man rush thing has been consistent through the first three games. That is the one area that is very fixable, but it's they're disconnected with how they get back on defense, right? When you play forward and aggressive, they are not playing back. Like, for example, a Barry Trotz team, traditionally, going back through the years, I think Predator fans might be able to envision those types of teams. They were a little bit more rigid in making sure that you are not going to get odd man rushes, breakaways against, right? Because they are going to make sure that those players are back, the safeties, et cetera. An Andrew Burnett team, and to some degree a Peter Laviolette team, is going to push the envelope, be more aggressive. But when you do that, you really have to be on the same page and be connected to make sure that you don't get caught up the ice. And they have been caught up the ice way too much. So the attention to detail with the system, there's been too many breakdowns, and it burned them last night. The one you mentioned, you know, they dug out of a couple holes. At the end of the second period last night, I felt pretty good about where it was going. They didn't play great in the first two periods, but they battled. They dominated the last 5 to 10 minutes of the second period. And D-Mace, you mentioned it, they had a 4-on-3. They absolutely peppered the goalie. They got great chances, and somehow they didn't score. I thought for sure that they were going to take the lead there. They didn't, so they go into the third period, and Jaden Schwartz scores at the end of an odd man rush where they got caught up the ice. Not everybody on the ice was on the same page, and they got burned. And then, boom, another goal scores, and they unravel from there. So all that to say, look, this is fixable. And I would point out that there's you mentioned the 0-3 team in 06-07. I think there was some huge parallels, right, of what Andrew Burnett said last night and what Barry Trotz said back then. I was part of the announcing team back then. I remember that team very well. That team in 06-07 was really good the year before, unexpectedly, with Paul Kariya. They had the best team they had ever had before. And then they added Jason Arnott, J.P. Dumont. They had Shea Weber and Ryan Suter coming up through the ranks. And they thought they were really good. And they rolled in, and I believe they lost to Chicago 8-6 the first night. Chicago wasn't very good back then at all. In fact, they were terrible. And they went 0-3, and they were giving up a lot of goals. And I think the quote from Barry Trotz was something like this back then. We'll have to ask him about it, or maybe Jared will next Tuesday. He said, okay, you guys are playing the way you guys want to play, and we see what it is. It's 0-3. Now let's play the way I want you to play and see what happens. And they went 9-0-1 and got it together quick. I think this team has a lot of similarities. On paper, with the additions they made, like Arnott and Dumont back then, Marchessault, Stamkos, I think there's a little bit of sense of, hey, we could just out-firepower people. right? We're just better on paper. Look at these. We got these 40-goal scorers here. We got Forsberg over here. We're going to just outgun you. But if you don't play connected, it doesn't really matter who's on the ice and how talented those individual guys are. So I think that's the point, Burnett. And he said, we've lost our identity. You think about last year, the relentlessness. That was everybody humming along at the same pace. Everybody was connected. So it's not just playing the system, but it's playing together. It's playing fast. He mentioned last night that they look slow. And he said, when you're disconnected, you look slow. And Seattle was the quicker team last night. They were the more connected team. Seattle's a pretty sneaky good team. They're very deep, and they played their system very well last night and won. They deserve to win.
So with that being said, Willie, and it's crazy, and I've always said this, at least for the last three seasons, there seems to be some parallel between them and the Tennessee Titans. I don't know why it happens, but it seems to be a parallel between those two teams at times. And right now, it seems like the parallel is you bring in these high-powered, you know, free agents or guys that have done well in your particular sport. You put them all together, and then all of a sudden people think, like, man, look at all this fire. Look at the Titans. They got 3,000-yard receivers at one point in their career. Look at the Nashville Predators. They got 40 goal scorers that they brought in. Not knowing that, yeah, you can bring these guys in, but until they start to mesh, I don't care if they score 90 goals apiece. It's not going to work. And right now, whatever they're doing, it isn't working well enough for them to win games. Maybe, just maybe, and listen, I'm not the head coach here, but maybe, just maybe, stick with a line. Stick with a line for a few games or so and see what those lines do instead of trotting out a line there. It's not going well, then you change the line again. Guys got to get used to one another. And listen, Coach Bruno knows more than I could ever know, and Barry knows more than I would ever know. But being an athlete, knowing that continuity is everything in sports, especially when they're so closely contested, you have to stick with something and allow it to start working before you say, I didn't work this game, let me switch again. I didn't work this game, let me switch. You got to sit in it for a while. You got to stew in it and see and let these guys let them figure it out themselves. Tell them to do something. Show them what to do. Tell them, hey, listen, run it my way now. Like you said, Willie, let's do it my way. But let them work through it as they're doing it your way. Don't, if it's not working, don't say, I need to change the line again. Let these guys get used to one another.
I think that he actually mentioned that. Uh-huh. He said, maybe it's on me. Maybe I should be a little more patient with the lines. They do continue to try things.
They have started, I just want to point this out as you continue. They have started a different second line in each game. It went Stamkos, Novak, Marchessault in the first game, Stamkos, Sissons, Marchessault in the second game, Smith, Stamkos, Marchessault in the third game.
Right.
That second line, there has not been a game where the same second line starts the game yet this season.
And they knew that that was going to take some time. They said it July the 1st, when Andrew Burnett was interviewed by Jared on July 1st. Believe me, I was listening, because what a day that was, right? Jared said, well, what are you thinking? What are you thinking about? Who's going to play with Marchessault and Stamkos? Because everybody was thinking the same thing. That's the perfectly logical question to answer. And he said, we just did this. It's going to take some time. And I got to figure it out. And he said, it's going to take time when the season starts. And he's continued with that theme. So the question is, also keep in mind that when they played the preseason games, for whatever reason, the teams that they played against didn't dress anybody. They didn't play against an NHL team in the preseason at all. They wanted to. They played their guys. And unfortunately, in those games, the other team was playing the AHL guys and prospects. They also had a game that was canceled against Tampa Bay, so that was one less game they had to look at it in a real game setting. Not to make excuses for them, but I think that has slowed down the process of getting those guys up to speed and getting the chemistry together the way they want it. So maybe that is the solution, is go with something and let's stick with it for a couple of days. But this is a constant dilemma that coaches have, I think, with this part of it. I think the disappointing part to me is that It's one thing for the new guys to not quite be on the same page yet, but the guys that are back from last year, they should be the ones picking up the slack, you know, and that's where I think some of the disappointment comes from. Look, they're 0-3. Here's another example. I'll give you a few. We've talked about 06-07 was 0-3. John Hines' team that surprised everybody and made the playoffs in 21-22 was 1-4 to start the season. Last year's team was 5-10, famously. There's a team in Predator history that went 2-5-1 in the first eight games. That was the 2016-17 team that made it to the Stanley Cup final. So all that to say, I know that there's this notion of if you're not in it by Thanksgiving, if you're out of it by Thanksgiving, you're not going to come back. And that is true most years. But I do think that plenty of Predator teams have started slow and figured it out. I could go on. I mean, there's other teams that we can point to. So,
but how many Predators teams spent $108.5 million for perhaps the three best free agents on the market in one summer? I think that's what Predators fans are upset about.
Why does that have anything to do with?
Because it's high, because of the level of expectation. I think that's why people are upset about this start.
Well, I think the 16-17 team had plenty of expectation.
Sure, but I'm not saying one is worse than the other. I think
the 06-07 team had huge expectations after adding Arnett, Dumont to already
sure,
Paul
no,
Kariya.
Not and, discounting and those that guys. Either. I think that is why you've seen some angst from Predators fans.
Angst is absolutely natural. When you're 0-3,
yes.
Angst is going to be there. Like it's
right.
I don't blame anybody for being upset and worried and all that stuff. Absolutely. Andrew Burnett, I guarantee you didn't sleep very
you
well
made,
last night.
You made a point.
I didn't sleep very
you
well.
You made a point that I think is interesting. Because when we had this conversation before the start of the season about how long it was going to take the new guys to adjust to their new surroundings. The one thing I kept falling back on, to your point, Willie, is I don't expect as much of a learning curve because most of the players on the team know what's going on. The newer players are insulated maybe a little bit from those struggles because the majority of the team is back under Andrew Burnett. They know what to expect from him and what he wants out there. And you have veteran players who have, you know, who should be able to adjust, albeit, you know, in the case of Stamkos, as we've talked about, spending 16 seasons in one area, you develop certain instinctual things. He's going to have to rewire his brain, to borrow a term from Will Levis. But I agree with you. I feel like the players that are returning from last year's team, I expected more of them to start to maybe pick up the slack for the new players that may need some time to adjust. One of the things that, you know, I knew it, but when I wrote it down, you know, it kind of shocked me. The Predators have not led a game at any point this season. They are the only team in the NHL to have not played a single second with a lead. Right. Every other team in the league, Avalanche.
And they've been down 2-0. In all of the games. That was my stat of the game, if you want to call that. After home games, I do a stat of the game. That's what I centered in on. Because I think that lends itself to you start trying too hard. You start pushing. You start forcing. And that's where, if you're not on the same page, you get exploited. I do think that has happened some to them. And that's probably overgeneralizing, but like I said, at the end of two periods last night, I thought they were on the verge of busting through and winning. So each game, they've been right in it. It's not like they're getting blown out or anything like that. These are fixable things. But I agree with you. Philip Forsberg last year, tons of shots, more than he'd ever taken before. And I think he had one goal in the first, I don't know, 8 or 9 games. Ended up with 48. I'm seeing some of the same things right now. Forsberg, Marchessault, Stamkos, they've combined for one goal, the 340-something goal scorers. They're getting tons of shots. They're getting huge chances. It's not going in right now. It will over 82 games if they stay healthy and keep doing the same things. They're generating plenty of chances offensively. They're going to start scoring more goals. I think what they've just got to make sure they are doing is getting connected, not trying to do too much, staying patient, and not getting caught up the ice and giving up these huge chances to the other team, which is putting them behind the eight ball. It's digging them holes in games.
Austin on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, I think makes the point I was trying to make before about the spending and free agency. Austin says, Preds felt like they were going to take the lead last night for all of 4 minutes. Power play was supposed to be bolstered by free agent acquisitions and has been underwhelming, 1-for-11 to start the season. Stars haven't been scoring. Saros looked rough. Last season, Trotz told us to be patient. Spending in the offseason told us to get excited. I'm not excited through three games. That is Austin.
Why would anybody be excited after three games?
But I think that's my
They're
point.
They're 0-3.
About, I
you
think
shouldn't
that
be
was
excited.
My point.
You should be upset. You should be angry. But you should not panic. I think you always worry. You're always worried about something. But you have a ton, you have 79 games.
I understand.
79 games.
I am not hitting the panic button right now.
Let me give you the power play. The power play is 1-for-whatever it is.
1-for-11.
If you watch that power play, they have the puck. They're getting the pitches. Like, it's like getting pitches to hit and just not hitting them.
I would agree with that.
They are peppering the net. It will start going in. And they will only get better in how connected they are, you know, with those five guys that they've chosen to go with, right? If they had the same five guys from last year, then I would be a little bit more concerned, like, what's going on? But you always look at things. Are they getting zone time? Yes.
Yes.
Are they getting shot attempts?
Yes.
Yes. Are they getting pretty good quality? Yes.
It's getting better.
It's getting better. Needs to continue to get better. And it's just not going in. But the 4-on-3, I thought, was maybe the biggest moment in the game, where the crowd's into it. They've tied the game. They're on the verge of taking the lead. They've got golden opportunities. They're hammering the puck, and it didn't go in. Again, got to get it done. You should be upset. You shouldn't be excited. But I think it is kind of back to the drawing board, right? Maybe this is what they need to shock themselves into saying, we need to get back to the basics here and get connected.
It's early. Again, I emphasize this. It's early. I personally am not striking any sort of panic button yet. But when we talk about deficits that you have to make up to qualify for the playoffs, a challenge for a division title, the Predators are already 8 points behind the Dallas Stars. The Dallas Stars are 4-0. Winnipeg is 3-0. The Predators are 0-3. So, I mean, those 8 points, it's three games into the season, but 8 points is a significant deficit to try to cut into over the course of the season. But the Predators fall to 0-3-0 to start the season. Tomorrow, they will look to avoid their first 0-4-0 start in franchise history. Have never started a season 0-4-0. 6-1-5. 615-737-1025. That sounded like a hockey record. They were 6-1-5. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Predators with Chris Mason, Willie's broadcast partner. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063. The game. It's time to chat with our resident goalie, Chris Mason, Predators TV analyst, joins us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris, we were just talking about the Predators' 0-3-0 start to the season after losing 7-3 to the Seattle Kraken last night. And the first thing I brought up that has me pretty concerned is their defensive play, the Predators' defensive play through three games, specifically in giving up odd man rushes. We saw Seattle score 2 goals off of odd man rushes last night. It's been a problem through three games. What are you seeing as to why the Predators are having these issues defensively?
Yeah, that's one of the most concerning things, but it's easily correctable. So that's where I stand with that. But what they're doing right now, and I think the other games, I think there was stretches, smaller stretches, and maybe condensed in a certain time, the second period in particular, against Dallas. And then there was a few against the Red Wings, but, you know, it's manageable. And maybe, you know, you could say, oh, it's the beginning of the season. Everybody's kind of doing that kind of thing. And we're not back to the, you know, the clamping down on the details. So that's something that's going to come. But last night, the dam broke. It was not good. You get, I don't know how many times they got caught with three forwards being over aggressive. It's not a matter of the work ethic. These guys are working hard, but you know, when you play hockey and when you're in a system like that, it's, you always say you got to work hard and smart. And they were just going after it. It was almost like they're just throwing, you know, their intuition to the wind and just going after the puck carrier. And, you know, so in a situation, let's say you have three guys going hard on the forecheck and they're below the goal line. Well, that's a red light for a defenseman to pinch down the wall, unless you're 100%, which is very tough in that situation to know how to do. But there is times, the one time I think was in the first period, Lauzon pinches down the wall. He gets beat. The puck goes by him. It's a 2-on-1. It's in the back of the net. And then instances like that where they just weren't reading the plays, they weren't supporting the way, you know, that they defended last year, I guess, is where I go back to, you know, it's early in the season, so you kind of default to last season when they were playing well and they were supporting each other. They're just out of sync. And they're just, I think they're almost trying too hard early and just not really thinking and reading off each other very well, which is leading to those odd man rushes. And it's happening, I thought, last night too frequently, and it really cost them. And I think, you know, I'm not really concerned about it. It'll eventually sort itself out and they'll start playing the right way. But last night was not good.
Chris, the Predators have started a different second line in each of their first three games. Of course, those lines change over the course of the game, but in terms of the lines that we expect at the start of the game, what we see in pregame line rushes, they have started a different version of the second line in each of their first three games. It's important for the Predators to get Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault going at 5-on-5. Based on the combinations you've seen so far, which one do you feel like gives the Predators the best chance to allow those two players in particular to get going offensively?
Well, that's tough because I don't really know. I think if we had saw one of those lines that you, maybe Bruno would have been a little more patient with it and stuck with it. I think last year, and he did this at the end of the game, he put Stamkos with O'Reilly and Forsberg and then shuffled, I think it was Sissons, Nyquist, at the end of the game, he moved them down with Marchessault. And when they traded for Zucker and Bevilier last year, they tried to start them together, you know, and put somebody in the middle. And it didn't really work out because they weren't really familiar with the system. And when you have two guys on the same line, it kind of, you know, throws things off. So I'm very interested to see how he will approach next game. And maybe that's something, you know, that's in the back of his mind or that he's talking about with the coaching staff and the players, is to maybe try to split them up. Although eventually you're going to put them back together, but just to get them acclimated and maybe just to try to get, you know, something going between those lines. I thought the Novak, Evangelista, Jankowski line was their best line last night. I thought they were really good. But yeah, that line, you could just see hesitation. You know, they had Cole Smith there, and he was hoping that would drive them and bring them into the fight and get them into, you know, being aggressive in terms of the way that, you know, they're exiting the zone and getting into the zone, and it didn't really work out. So I'm not exactly sure, but I do know at the end of the game he split them up. So we'll have to see. That's one thing I'll be looking for either today in practice what the lines are, or tomorrow at pregame skate.
We're talking with Chris Mason, part of the Nashville Predators television broadcast. Now, you just mentioned the line with Novak in it. He scored two goals over the last four games. Assess his play thus far, because he was one of the guys coming into the season that it was going to be a spotlight on. He needed to take another step in his maturity process on the ice and start to have a bigger role or take a bigger role in what they were doing. But assess his play thus far.
You know, this is kind of goes back to Adam's question as well. To me, he's the guy that's got to be the centerman between Marchessault and Stamkos. I think he's got the skill set. He's the type of player that I think those guys need in order to thrive, because he can hang on to pucks. You know, he's not like let's say a Cole Smith and a Colton Sissons, guys that are playing straight lines. They drive, they're good down low, they can get pucks and you know, get up and do that kind of thing. But Tommy Novak is a player that can handle the puck. He's a very good heads-up player. He can hold on to it. He can bring coverage to him. He can make plays. I thought the last couple of years he's really started to take more of initiative to shoot the puck. He's got a great shot. He's the guy that needs to play there eventually. But he was the one that started this season, and things didn't go great at the start. And, you know, for whatever reason, Bruno didn't like what he saw, and I don't think, you know, anybody did. They weren't clicking. He's got chemistry with Evangelista and Jankowski, I think, which we all saw last night. They were the most effective line. I think they played very well together. But eventually, to me, he's the guy that's got to go up, and he's got to grab that moment. And I think he's at a point in his career. He's had some really good stretches. We've all seen the talent, the heads-up play on the power play. He's nifty. He's a really skilled player. But it seems every time he gets in one of those situations where he's kind of promoted to, all right, you're in a top two line situation, he hasn't quite risen up to that challenge. And I think this year, eventually, that's got to be the line. If you want that two-headed monster, the top two lines to be able to produce consistently and be in matchup nightmares for oppositions like, you know, they were hoping for, I think to me, he's got to be the centerman on that line.
Chris Mason is with us. We're talking about the Predators last night falling 7-3 to the Seattle Kraken. Mace, it was interesting to me as you looked at the final stats. Last year, when they were really cooking, the fourth line, and it ended up being the same guys for most of it with Sherwood, McCarron, and Cole Smith. Last night, the fourth line was McCarron, Colton Sissons, and Juuso Parsonen. I would have thought that going into the game, you know, you can rely on that line. They get, unlike some fourth lines, they get important defensive assignments. But last night, if you wanted to zero in on one line that really, because everybody's looking at who's not scoring and things like that, but the fourth line last night really struggled. And I think Andrew Burnett, I heard him reference that in the post-game press conference. And that was a little bit of what he circled with. Maybe I need to not move guys around so much. Because those were three guys that had not played together before.
Yeah, he mentioned that. He goes, maybe it's, that's what one thing I like about Burnett is, you know, he's trying things, and sometimes, you know, he takes responsibility for something that might not have worked out. But at the end of the day, you know, you've got two for sure extremely reliable players, and I bet they could tell you, you know, Kara talked to McCarron after the first period, and that line was able to get the first goal of the game for the team, but they gave up three. They're on for the first three. And some of those plays and situations aren't typically what you're going to see. They're one of the lines that got caught three guys down low. They turned over a puck in the defensive zone, ends up in the back of the net. So there's a lot of uncharacteristic plays and situations, I think. And, you know, part of that maybe not having playing together, knowing that, hey, you know, Sisson's always going to be the first guy, Aaron or McCarron, and just reading off each other. But these guys know better. They've played with enough different players over their careers. They understand the responsibilities and the reads and things like that. It's just, it was an off night. It was not a good night. And, you know, we're not in the point of the season where I'm concerned about anything long-term. They're eventually going to right the ship. They're eventually going to score goals. They're going to score a lot of goals. They're going to be better defensively. They still have some key players, you know, learning the system. But to me, I think the biggest thing is a mindset. I think sometimes when you add players like Stamkos and Marchessault and Brady Shea, you might think as a collective that you don't have to maybe work quite as hard, because last season, every single night, you knew every single player would do whatever it took, whether it's going to the net and all these different types of things. And right now, I think it's a combination of it's early. They're not executing the system. And one of the things that Burnett said to us before the game, and we talked about it on the broadcast, is that he knew it would take the new guys a while to kind of get it and to kind of, you know, get it into their repertoire and the muscle memory and just, you know, getting rid of the old habits and the way that you play. But he said a lot of the guys that played it last year and played it, you know, down the stretch and played it very well, aren't playing up to the standard that they all agree they need to play to in order to be successful. So that's the thing that's even more concerning is the guys that know how hard it is, but know the rewards of if you play it that way, you know, the success you can have as a team, that aren't doing it right now. So they've got to kind of get their minds back into, I don't care if we've added skill, I don't care if we've added superstars, you have to play with that same grit and that same determination. And it's hard and it's demanding. But if you do it, you can win hockey games, score a lot of goals, and you can play the brand that they want to play. And they're definitely not there yet.
Mates, leave us with this. I think Andrew Brunette issued the challenge, I think it was to Kara, when she asked about the Oilers coming in. I feel like the Oilers, in some way, this is a good test, because Andrew Brunette just laid it out very simply. He goes, if you play summer hockey, disconnected hockey, without our identity against the Oilers, see how that's going to go. I feel like that will be the message today. And maybe a team like the Oilers coming in could, for lack of a better term, almost scare them into, hey, we've got to change or else this is going to be ugly.
Well, I think you, when you have enough, and we've seen how that is, by the way, we've seen that in Bridgestone, that when you're not ready to play against that team, we've seen that against this team. And it was actually at a similar time, I think last season, if you're not ready to play, they're going to eat you alive. And, you know, they ended up squeaking it out in overtime, but this is a team, they're 1-3. You know, they're not off to a great start. This is a team that made the Stanley Cup final and they intend to be back there again. So I think the opponent does do that to you too, because, you know, if you go and play, maybe Seattle doesn't scare you. Yes, they have a good team. Yes, they're deep, but you don't look at them and just go, you know, you just don't have that fear factor. But everybody knows if you're not ready to go, and if you're chasing plays, which means you're going to take penalties and you're behind the play and you're out of position all night long, you're going to be reaching and eventually you're going to start taking penalties. And then maybe the best power play, I think, that we've seen in the last century is going to rip you apart. So I think that if you're in that locker room, you know, there has to be a sense of urgency. You know, it's not time to panic or anything like that, or have closed door meetings or anything like that. But, you know, you have a tough home stretch here, and it starts tomorrow against the Edmonton Oilers, who are in a similar situation as the Predators. They're not off to a great start. They got their first win, but they're going to come in looking for blood.
Chris Mason, Predators television analyst, joining us as he does every Wednesday morning. Mace, thanks for joining us. We'll talk next week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Always a pleasure to talk to Chris Mason. Anytime you can talk to a Mason, a Chris Mason, a Derek Mason, a Free Mason.
Another Derek Mason.
Anthony Mason, TSU Mason, grad.
Yes. Yeah.
Just the Mace family.
Yeah,
so many
Masons.
Or
drinking out of a Mason jar. I mean, do what you do.
That is a nice thing to do during the summertime.
Yes.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we have a college football game this weekend with major playoff implications, and we'll get to that next. Also, tune in to 102.5, 106.3, the game this Saturday for Vanderbilt football. The Commodores will take on Ball State, with pregame beginning at 4:30 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan, moving to 102.5 the game following the Preds game. Vanderbilt football kicks off at 6 p.m. Coverage is also available on the 102.5 the game app and at thegamenashville.com. Preds fans, don't miss tonight's Smashville Live at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs at 6. See your favorite Predators players up close and personal. You can get autographs and pictures too. Player guests this evening will be Philip Tomasino and Yusso Parsonen. That's tonight at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs and on your home of the Nashville Predators, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We have a very intriguing college football matchup, SEC matchup on Saturday. I heard Chase describe it as a loser leaves town match. And for those of you who are not fans of professional wrestling, that was a way for wrestling promotions to basically write characters off. You know, two wrestlers would fight, the loser would have to leave, quote unquote, because maybe his contract was expiring or he was going to another company, whatever. But that's how they used to build up to it. Loser has to leave. So this is what the loser leaves town college football playoff version. Alabama at Tennessee on Saturday afternoon. Number 7 Alabama at number 11 Tennessee. It does feel like the loser of this game may be on the outside looking in of the college football playoff.
I would agree. And I would take it one step further. Even if they somehow both end up in the playoff, which is, I guess, possible, What I'm seeing week in, week out at college football is it just seems like the gap between the top four teams, take the old playoff system where the top four make it, I think there's less of a gap between the top five or so and then the next 15. And I admit, I didn't believe this was going to be true when NIL started. And there were some people, I don't know if I would call them progressive thinking people, that theorized that if enough teams get into the NIL game, it will level the playing field. It will not separate only make the rich richer. I think we found some examples of that. I mean, no better one than Vanderbilt able to beat Alabama. I don't think that was even thinkable. But I guess if everybody's paying money in the power conferences, it does level the playing field. It gives you a chance to compete. So I would go as far as to say not only getting into the playoffs, but also in the competition to get the bye in the first round. I thought, D-Mace, we would see the first round of the playoffs with a lot of mismatches because of the automatic bids and things like that. I no longer think that. I think the college football playoff now, because the parity is a little more than it was, they're going to be unbelievable. I don't think we're going to see as many blowouts as I thought if you would have had this system 10 years ago.
No, I don't think that, because you're able now to go out and pay players. Before, you know, when it was done under the table, and you feared about getting caught and having to deal with the repercussions from there. But now that everything's on the table, it has allowed, you know, some of these teams that probably, you know, couldn't compete on a week-in, week-out basis, now they can compete. But it also, on the flip side of that, it is taking these, you know, these teams that have been good, and then all of a sudden, you know, they want to go out and get players, and then it don't work, i.e.
Right.
Ole Miss.
Exactly. That's the flip side, is the rich teams that are throwing money at a lot of players. It doesn't always work well.
Exactly. Absolutely. So I look at this game because I think each team has its own problem. Obviously, Alabama's defense is nothing like we are accustomed seeing from an Alabama defense. On the flip side, UT's defense is something we haven't seen, you know, in the last 3-4 seasons from a defense. This is probably the best defense in all of college football, considering their schedule and everything else, what they've been able to do. It's been UT's offense, and I think a lot of people thought that once you added Nico, you got some good wide receivers, your running game seems to be okay, this offense would take another step under Heupel. It hasn't taken that step. It seems like they've taken a few steps back since Hendon Hooker days. And that was, what, 2 years ago. So Alabama's problem is their defense, and they can't protect Milroe. And Tennessee's problem is their offense. They can't consistently put up points.
The Alabama defense in particular, if you look at the Georgia game, the Vanderbilt game, and the South Carolina game, it just doesn't look like your traditional Alabama defense. They are really having trouble at the line of scrimmage. They're having trouble really in all areas, third downs. It's baffling. It's got to be to Alabama fans to watch them struggle like that, because they're just not physically dominating games like they have for the last couple decades.
And that's the difference in college football, I believe, is that you can have a bunch of really good players, but if you don't have that one guy that connects them all, they're going to struggle. One thing Coach Saban did excellent is he made sure everyone was connected. The offense understood why the defense was doing what they were doing, and the defense understood why the offense was doing what they were doing. There was no disconnect between either side. It seems like there's a disconnect between Alabama's offense and Alabama's defense.
Agreed. Both of these teams are coming into this game having very similar performances over the past 2 weeks. We know Alabama lost here to Vanderbilt and then escaped South Carolina following week.
That wasn't just an escape. That was a Houdini. They tried every which way to cough it up. Like, that was like, if you just draw up, how much madness can we create in the last quarter. I mean, they tried everything. The onside kick, yes. The two-point conversion. I mean, there was all of that stuff. I don't know how they won.
So Alabama loses to Vanderbilt. They follow that up with a win, but a nail-biting win, to say the least, against South Carolina. Tennessee loses to Arkansas 2 weeks ago and needed overtime to beat Florida, which I certainly didn't expect. I thought Tennessee would be able to handle them to the fact that and take it to the bank last week. I said that Tennessee would win by at least 17 points. That definitely did not happen. But both of these teams are coming into this game on shaky ground, which adds another layer of intrigue to this matchup, which would have been intriguing by itself because of the caliber of teams. But when you consider how they've played over the past 2 weeks and the implications that it could have on the college football playoff, I mean, it certainly seems like a must-watch game this weekend.
Yeah, and it's not for the reasons mm-hmm. that you thought, for everything you put out there, because they don't look like juggernauts, right? They're both ranked pretty well, and there's that perception of these are teams that could contend for a title. But they've looked like anything but that the last few weeks.
Yeah, well, we will see this type of game, because the expanded playoffs was, you know, sort of touted as this, you know, playoff that now you can get four SEC teams in or four Big Ten teams in, or sort of geared more toward the Power Four because it's no longer Power Five. But what it's looking like is it may not be that way. It's not an automatic that you're going to get four teams out the SEC or four teams out of the Big Ten. A lot of it is because, you know, frankly, they're going to beat each other up. And the teams that actually like left the Pac-12 or the Pac whatever it is now, I don't think they really understood what it was going to mean by you leaving your conference, going to the Big Ten or the SEC. I don't think y'all really truly thought about it outside of the money aspect, because now it's a dogfight every week and y'all are going to beat each other up. And nobody, to get a three-loss team in, it's going to be hard. To get a two-loss team in, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, you got to have things fall your way.
So my thing is, now that I look at it, I get why they left, SC and all those teams, Oregon, because of the money, but it would have been a little bit easier.
I asked that question when they stayed in the Pac-12. I said, I ask yourself this question. Did your school just have their chances get better or worse of winning a national title? And I think in a lot of cases, mm-hmm. it got harder
exactly.
and not easier. And I think that's a great example. And I will say this too, and we'll come back to this at 1 o'clock with Mitch. We talk college football. Just having watched Alabama's last three games, I cannot believe they are favored on the road at Tennessee. That's
minus,
just my gut.
Minus three.
Minus three.
I checked.
I just don't. I don't see that. Now, Tennessee. I know Tennessee fans will say, "Well, they got issues too," and I see that as well. But Alabama does not look like a team that can go to Tennessee and be the favorite. They have major weaknesses to me.
Hey, maybe somebody will choose that game in silly underdog picks tomorrow at noon. We shall see. 615-737-1025. We'll get into the Titans coming up next. Jonathan Hutton will join us at 12:20. Join 1025, 1063, The Game, and Joe Dubin from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. this Saturday at Hope Fest 2024, a family-friendly festival, say that 10 times fast, celebrating hope found in the faith and recovery community. The event will be held at the Bethel Church of the Nazarene at 455 Broadmoor Drive in Nashville from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. with free food, games for the kids, mental health and recovery resources available. The Tennessee Titans Alumni Association will be on hand with their vaccination clinic. More details at thegamenashville.com/events.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.